From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by DataPipe Managed IT Services, delivering a comprehensive suite of managed services, including implementing, securing, and scaling applications designed for mid-market and Fortune 1000 enterprises. DataPipe.com.
For the past 5 days, the Film Society of Lincoln Center has been honoring Baman Famanara with a series devoted to his films called Storm Warnings. It runs through tomorrow at the Walter Reed Theater. Mr. Famanara, who was one of the bright lights of Iranian cinema before the revolution, has the rare distinction of being banned by two of his country's governments, the Shahs, and then the Islamic regime that replaced the Shah, continued to blacklist his work. Recently, after a 21-year hiatus, he's begun making films again, and I'm very pleased to welcome Baman Famanara to my show. Hello.
Hi. I'm very happy to be here.
How many films have you made since you were allowed to start filming again with Smell of Camphor, Fragrance of Jasmine?
Three from the year 2000. But before that, 11 scripts were not allowed to be shot. And so Smell of Camphor is actually the 12th script.
And actually, you address the whole matter of being a filmmaker who can't make movies in that film. And I would have thought that that was the sort of thing that the censors would have been more upset about than what might have been in some of the previous scripts.
Well, censors are not really famous for their intelligence. Otherwise, they wouldn't accept to be sitting on a censorship board. And I think that what led me to make that film was the structure of the story and the way it was told as a puzzle. So they didn't understand it till they saw the film. And by that time, you know, it was too late.
In the film, the protagonist, who happens to have the same name as you, although a different last name, played by you, and we'll get into that in a moment, says that for a filmmaker not to make films, for a writer not to be able to write, is a kind of death. So what did you do during those 20-odd years when you weren't able to practice your art?
Well, a year and a half after the revolution, because they banned the film that I had made at the time of the Shah,
that was the
called
third.
The Tall Shadows of the Wind, that film has got a dubious honor of being banned both by the Shah regime and the Khomeini regime a year and a half after the revolution.
For the same reasons?
For the same reasons, because the story is about the scarecrow that they build in a village, and the scarecrow gradually inherits the village. Before the revolution, they said by the scarecrow, you mean the Shah and the Secret Service. And after the revolution, they said by that, you mean the Khomeini and his Secret Service. And I said, nobody, as far as I know, has made a film against the government before they come to power. So, but that's, you know, you cannot really discuss it. And that's when I realized that till they settle down with their cultural agenda, I was going to be out of work for a long time. So I took my kids to Canada and worked in U.S. and Canada and through having a distribution company, and I distributed Billy August's first two films, Fourth Man of Paul Verhoeven, and a last film of Truffaut, and Prenum Carmen of Godard, and we had an office in New York and that. So for 10 years, till my kids grew up and they went to university, I worked. And
but why not make films here or in Canada? Other people have made films in exile.
Yeah, I understand.
Including Iranians.
I understand that, but I don't want to be painted into that corner, which a lot of... And one basic reason for it, why I didn't try, because our culture is very much rooted in our religion and the very long history. And we don't share that in this country as a starting point. And for me, it was very difficult, even though I had I knew the language. I had gone here to school, and I graduated from USC and so on, film school. But I still felt that in distribution and production, I was safer. And the last film that I was producing before I left, it was Liolo by Jean-Claude Lauzon. And then I went back to Iran because my father said that my younger brother had had a heart attack, and we have a textile family, and I went there. And
to take over the family business?
Yes, and for the 10 years that they didn't let me work, because I had left Iran after the revolution, and that's a strike against you.
Mm-hmm. And also you are Western educated.
Yes.
U.S.
Yes. And that's why that was a sort of a safe haven for me when I was doing that. And for the last 9 years, I've also been the CEO of this textile company, but I've done 3 films. And I'm about to start go to pre-production of another one.
But I can understand why people might be a bit leery of you. You have insisted on making films with controversial subject matter. Had made films. You'd been an executive, not just made films, but you'd been an executive of the film industry under the Shah. And you'd gone to school at USC.
I understand that. I think
you're always guaranteed to be a troublemaker.
It was a strike against you when you were too famous at the time of the Shah. A lot of actors and some writers were banned right off the bat. And they told me point blank because they remind people of the time of the Shah. So, but that was more true of the actors.
But you've even addressed that in some of these films.
Yes, yes, I've done that, and I don't owe them anything, you know, because I mean, before the revolution, I co-produced actually Desert of Tartars with France and Italy. I worked with Orson Welles,
didn't you give Abbas Kiarostami his first feature film?
The first feature film that he directed, The Report. Yes, I was the producer of it. So I had all this energy that I wanted to, channelize towards work, and I did it. And, of course, they didn't like most of it, but so be it, you know. I'm at an age that I cannot be silent. My career could not go any... I mean, I couldn't become more famous than the way I am in Iran. So I feel that because financially I'm not in trouble... thanks to the business, the family business, I'm more independent.
Well, you also, I assume, are only addressing a small part of the Iranian populace. So the things that you're talking about are only going to be understood by intellectuals, don't you think?
Well, we have 65% of the population is below the age of 25. And oddly enough, they are... the greatest fans of my film, the young people. Wherever I go, I talk in the university and so on. The people are far more clever than they're given credit to. And my films, when I go into a theater, they're screening my film, 90% of the audience are young people. And the love affair with movies and cinema as a whole in my country is like no other country. I mean, I go to talk at a university, and the hall has got about 400, 500 seat capacity. About 1,800 people show up. And for a director, because a movie director in my country is the star of filmmaking. And that is what I find it very exciting.
I've only seen one of your pre-revolutionary films, Prince et Hijab.
Yes.
Very different from the films you've made since. Is there a style? Do you see there as an Iranian style right now?
Not really. I mean, I suit the style of film to its subject matter. The Prince et Hijab was based on a major novel in Iran. And what attracted me, it was the structure of it, which actually in 2 other films, like A Little Kiss and A Smell of Camphor, Fragrance of Jasmine, I've used that kind of a structure. But the basic point was, at the time of the Shah, I made a film which was an anti-monarchy. And we got away with it, and the film won the Grand Prix prize at the Tehran Film Festival at the time. And I liked that challenge, that you go there. I made a film called A House Built on Water, And that directly goes toward the ruling of the clergy and religion being involved in the government. And that's why that film had a lot of trouble.
And that film, actually, the title comes from an old Iranian proverb, life without hope is like a house built on water.
Yes, that is true.
And I'm assuming that that's something that you took personally as well during some of the rougher times.
Well, yes, but also in that particular film, the young people in our country, the university graduates, high school graduates, I mean, 40 million out of 70 million, they are below the age of 25. They don't have jobs. They don't have any prospects of jobs. And this is like sitting on a time bomb and not paying attention to the ticking.
Well, I've wondered about that in every way when I look at Iran, because we're talking about one of the richest cultures of the world, one that goes back a very long time, has Zoroastrianism involved in it, and pretty much all of the world's religions have been there. Persia was the great rival to Greece during the Golden Age, et cetera. Some of the greatest architecture in the world and great literary traditions. And then suddenly we have a situation in which it seems to me there is a tight lid being put on what must be a very, very energetic pressure cooker.
I know, but that's the only place I think they have failed. Yes, the country, they are ruling. They have the control of everything. You have to watch what you say on your cell phone and other phones if you are noticed. But they have not been able to stop the writers, the painters, and other people. But they have, for movies, we have this problem that I have to get once permission to shoot the film. After the film is finished, I have to get a release permit. So we go through censorship twice. But as Borges, the Argentinian poet, has said, censorship is the mother of all metaphors, and that is what helps us to get away with it.
Well, I guess it goes beyond that, and that's when people get worried. Abbas Kiarostami was here once, and we talked about what happened after he won the grand prize at Cannes, and Catherine Deneuve kissed him on both cheeks, those air kisses that you get. And he then had problems back home because he was kissed by a woman who wasn't his wife.
Well,
most men would die to be kissed by Catherine Deneuve.
Well, most of the problem was because everybody was jealous, because we all want to get kissed by Catherine Deneuve. And but those things are not serious. This film of mine, A Little Kiss, is the first film in 28 years that has got kiss in the title.
Yeah, that's a very provocative word in Iran, isn't it?
Well, because it starts of all troubles, it starts with a kiss.
In the case of Smell of Camphor, it's supposedly about filmmaking, but one subplot involves an abused woman on the run with her newborn baby, and there's a lot about her and other people having to deal with the inequities of the social system. People disappear. You're not sure whether they ran off with somebody else running away from a marriage or whether they were arrested in the middle of the night.
Well, that film was made at the time at the height of the serial killing of the intellectuals. And that's why I use that reference to the writer that disappears. And eventually, when he appears, they've done so much damage to him that he commits suicide. But we have said it in a society that was condoning killing of the intellectuals. So to get away with it, and because of the puzzle structure of the story, we got away by saying it. But it is difficult.
Well, what happens to someone like you if Kiarostami has to worry about being kissed on the cheek, and you come here, forgive me for asking this question, and are as outspoken as you are, do you face problems when you go back home?
No, it really is not that strict. And, number one, they have got too much on their plate as it is to pay attention whether I was on a radio program or not, or somebody
reports. Right, they're worrying about whether George Bush is planning to start a war.
Exactly, because it takes a George Bush to create an Ahmadinejad, and we all have too much problem as it is. Sometimes, you know, they collect all these things, and when you really cross the red lines, what they consider red lines, it's something that they call you to attention. Here, I was scheduled, for example, to be interviewed on Voice of America. I refused because there is a concerted effort in their programming, program against Islamic Republic. And because I'm going back, I don't want to give them any ideas that, you know, I went on a show and talked about it. But here in New York, I don't mind talk about anything.
You have another film in the works?
I do. I do. I got the permission on another script, which is called Know Your Land, which is the conflict between the youngest generation that we have and people of my age.
Are there are people in Iran worried that there might be a war?
I think if you're a thinking person and you the intensity of rhetoric that is thrown away on both sides, you wonder what is going to happen.
Some people say that the part of the problem is that the opposition boycotted the last election and paid the price.
No, the opposition did not. They actually, as far as I'm concerned, Ahmadinejad used a page from George Bush's re-election, and he went through grassroots politics, and he got elected.
Bahman Faminara's series is at the Film Society of Lincoln Center, the Walter Reed Theater. You can see many of the films today and the last day. Is it today's the last day of this?
Today's the last day, yes.
But I'm so grateful that you had some time to come here. Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.